Okay, start whenever you're ready. Okay.
Good morning and welcome to the October Commission meeting. And I would like us to start, Jamie, with a roll.
Yes, okay. Commissioner Briseño, Commissioner Buck.
I'm here.
Commissioner Duran, Commissioner Faruqi, Commissioner Kent, Commissioner Leach.
Here.
Commissioner Lee, Commissioner Matsuba.
Here.
Commissioner O'Neill. Commissioner Steinberg.
Present.
And Commissioner Wang.
Here.
And we only have five. Yeah, so we need two more. So, but
we can start. Okay, our first item, please.
Next item number two is opening quote reflection.
I think that's me this time.
Good morning. Yes.
So I'll try to kill a little time in hopes that two more of our fellow commissioners will join us. I've chosen for my reflection today the phrase human relations. Obviously, we all know that a loose definition would simply be the way we treat each other, how we communicate with each other, how we handle each other's differences or similarities, and sometimes how we handle the conflicts that rise amongst us. And I was realizing that in about the year and a half, I think it's coming up on, that I've served on this commission, we have spent a tremendous amount of time on the topic of hate, and rightfully so, but dealing with hate crimes, hate incidents, hate acts in general, much of it steeped in bigotry and racism, homophobia, xenophobia, anti-Semitism, on and on and on. Kind of the negativity at its finest, I suppose. But today I want to flip that just a little bit and share something with you that happened recently. And as I tell my grandchildren, I know it's the truth because I was there. And after I got over the shock of it a little bit, I realized I had been privileged to be part of a very positive human relation. The encounter occurred at the grocery store. I ran in, and like most of you, I went in to go in and get maybe two or three items. And before I knew it, there were probably about 20 items in my basket. And I thought, I've got to hit for the cashier before I do some real damage here. And so as I'm in line at the cashier, I realize there's someone right behind me, and I look around, and it's an elderly woman, even more elderly than I am. And all she had in her hand was a package of sushi. And I said, oh, hon, I said, go ahead of me. I said, I've got all these items in my basket. Go ahead and you check out first. And so she thanked me and she went ahead. Well, in her other hand, she had a leash and she had a little dog with her. And so as she's standing in front of the cashier, she's trying to get all her things out of her purse. And all of a sudden, the young cashier, in a rather harsh voice, says to her, ma'am, your dog is peeing all over the floor. Well, the elderly woman said, oh, you know, and she's apologetic. And she's saying, oh, my gosh, let me. So the young cashier gets her a roll of Bounty. And the elderly woman leans over and she's cleaning up after her dog and whatever. And it's taking time, but I didn't have anything to do or anything. And so she gets back up. And then the young woman says, again, in a rather harsh voice, oh, yeah, and your credit card was denied. And you could just see the woman's body language. Her shoulders sagged, her head dropped. She was embarrassed. She was frustrated. And she finally just said, you know what? Never mind. I don't need this. I'm just going to go home. And she turns to walk away. And I just simply said, ma'am, come back, get your sushi. I'll pay for it. It was like, what, $12? No big deal. I said, I've got it. Go enjoy your sushi tonight, you know. And so she said, thank you very much. As I stand in front of the cashier and say once again, put that on my bill, there's a voice behind me, a man's voice, that says, and put hers on mine.
Pay for it.
Well, I turn around in shock, and Of course, as I am wont to do, I started to try to argue with him. And I said, no, you don't have to do that. Because I'm telling you, I had probably about $80 worth of things, far from $12 in my basket. And I said, no, you don't have to do that. Oh, no, please, thank you. And he wasn't looking at me right away. He was just handing his credit card to the young cashier. And I said, oh, please, and he looked at me finally and he looked me in the eye and he said, yes, I do have to do this. I want to do this. And he once again handed his card to the cashier. And I told a friend later, I said, for me, it's what I kind of define as a God moment. And it was certainly a God moment for me. And my friend looked at me and she said, maybe it was a God moment for all four of you standing there at the cashier's desk. So I share this story very quickly with you just to say, if you're like me, sometimes we have to be reminded that there are both bad human relationships, but more importantly, there are good and worthy human relations. And I think we have to sometimes remind ourselves not everything is steeped in bigotry and hate acts, but there's kindness and there's empathy and there's respect and generosity out there. And when we do see those things, whether we're a part of it or not, we need to witness it. And then we need to go tell others about it so that we all learn something and take something away from it. And then we can start devoting a lot more of our time to the goodness of human relationships and not always the negativity. So thanks for letting me share my story today.
Oh, that's great. That's a beautiful story. Thanks for sharing.
I do think that's a very common story, Dot, even though it may not seem that way. I was in line with my birthday cake. I was buying myself a birthday cake because no one had bought me one. And the girl in front asked me, and I said, oh, I'm buying myself a birthday cake. And when I went to pay for it, she had paid for it. Oh. And so I did the same thing a few weeks later, and I have seen that happen. It's like contagious. Mm-hmm. And you're absolutely right, Dot. One good, kind act begets another kind act. And often I tend to always pay for police officers when I'm in line at Starbucks or anywhere. I pay ahead so that whatever they're ordering is paid for. And I think you'd be shocked if we did a survey how many kind, wonderful acts there are. And it's so lovely, Dot, for you to bring that today, because we do forget sometimes when we're steeped in the ugly. We do forget those lovely acts. So thank you very much for that too.
Yeah, it was a lovely story. And we're all encouraged to do that more and more, to pay it forward. If you're in a drive-through, then just say, I'm buying coffee for me in the car behind me. And then they said they often see that people, it just continues on. Yeah, that's great. All right, thank you. And moving on to our next item, please.
Okay, and just so you know, we do have a quorum now. Commissioners O'Neill and Duran did join us.
Great.
So item number 3 is monthly summary of commission activities.
And I believe is that Jennifer?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
So good morning, everybody. If you guys turn to page 5 of the packet, actually, it does list the monthly summary activities for September 2022. And on the bottom, I'll just read it out loud. The police community relations, the commission staff met with Fullerton police chief on a potential hate activity case. And then under the intergroup relations and relationship building, we have commission staff attended a school board meeting at Capistrano Unified School District, and commission staff attended 3 LGBTQIA plus virtual events on elevating the voices of queer youths. So good job, staff. And so I actually wanted to share something that happened last week. Last week, the commission was invited by Supervisor Bartlett and Supervisor Foley to make a presentation. There was 3 speakers. The first speaker was actually Shawnee. Shawnee's from the Iranian Chamber of Commerce. And then we had a professor from UCI, Matab, who are both Iranian-American women, and they spoke about basically the aftermath of Mahsa Amini's death. And Supervisor Bartlett and Foley really wanted to make the connection and for us, the county, to understand the connection between the impact of women's rights and the atrocity of Mahsa Amini's death that happened in Iran and how that affects our Iranian community in our county.
This is actually part of item 8, I believe.
I was going to say.
Really?
Yes. Okay. I didn't know if you were, how deep you were going, but yeah.
Yeah.
That comes up.
Okay, I was going to go deep, but okay. We'll wait until 8.
A little later. You have the whole line. thank you, Jamie. But thank you, Jennifer. We'll be hearing from you again soon.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. Okay, moving on to our next item. Okay.
Next is open forum. If anybody wishes to speak, if you could hit *9 on your phone or the hand raise icon on the Zoom app, and you will have 3 minutes and I will keep time. We have 2 people so far. First I saw was Felicity Figueroa. Okay, go ahead.
Thank you, Jamie, and good morning, commissioners. Thank you for your important work. And yes, paying it forward is certainly the way to go if we want to live in a truly compassionate world or county. So as chair of the Orange County Equality Coalition, an LGBTQIA rights organization, I'm really glad to see that you're going to have a presentation by the LGBTQ Plus Center OC today. Last Saturday's rally at the Anaheim Convention Center in favor of the American Academy of Pediatrics and Transgender Rights and the hateful protest against the Academy and our trans community members, a protest that included the Proud Boys, really showed that we still have a long way to go here in Orange County. I'm also quite concerned about the recent appointment of Robert Fagan as the executive director of the Office of Independent Review. Someone who for 2 decades represented the San Diego County Sheriff's Department as the Director of Legal Affairs. We were so pleased with the work that Sergio Perez, the former executive director, was doing and with his integrity and independence from the agencies he was hired to oversee. Of course, he did it so well, witness his scathing assessment of the Orange County Sheriff's Department very flawed training practices, that he soon left the department, apparently as a result of that report. Then unnamed members of the Board of Supervisors put a freeze on any hiring for that position. And now we get someone who watched over a department that had 185 people killed while in law enforcement custody between 2006 and 2020. All of this makes us extremely concerned about the future of the OIR. Even our own grand jury found that there has been undue influence over this office by the sheriff and certain members of the Board of Supervisors. I'd like to know what this commission is planning to do to be sure that oversight over the sheriff's department, probation, the DA, and other agencies is fair and unbiased. We've already seen what happens when there is a lack of transparency in government. Witness the debacle that is currently occurring in LA City Council, which has shown us the huge importance of oversight. Will Orange County's government be the next hot topic on national news? I certainly hope not. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Felicity.
Okay. Next speaker is Karen Hernandez. Okay, go ahead.
Hi, everyone, and good morning. I am here as a community member. I also work as an intern at the ACLU as part of the Orange County Jails Team Project. And I'm also just calling to share the same sentiments that Felicity is sharing in regards to the new hiring of Robert Fagan for the Office of Independent Review. I also work with a grassroots organization called Transforming Justice Orange County. And, you know, in both of these positions that I've been working in, the Office of the OIR was an organization that we worked with consistently. As part of my work with the Orange County Jails team, I listen and I accept calls from folks that are incarcerated in Orange County jails, and they call to talk to us about conditions of confinement that are, you know, never good calls. We would often put them in touch with people at the OIR with Sergio and Jack, and they always really, you know, were very grateful to have kind of an open door policy. And it always felt, like Felicity said, very impartial. It felt supportive. I just feel really disheartened that, you know, the Board of Supervisors, I think, continue to like just have this very lack of transparency in the way they do a lot of their hiring. I mean, even in terms of, I'm not sure if you all have seen that they've moved into this new building. Nobody was able to call into the meeting last week. You know, $400 million was spent on this building that still there is a lack of access to the public. I was really hoping that the Board of Supervisors would appoint a director that doesn't have ties to law enforcement, to local political leaders, and doesn't, you know, somebody that's not going to hurt their objectivity. You know, it was really essential that the hiring process be transparent and allow the community members to give input. And there was none of that. So just echoing again what Felicity said, I would love it if, you know, this commission could somehow work with the Board of Supervisors and, you know, recommending some kind of oversight of Sheriff Barnes, because I don't believe that Robert Fagan is going to be the person that is going to do a great job. Like Felicity said, you know, he served in San Diego's jail system and there was just soaring cases of in custody deaths. And, you know, to me, it doesn't matter what folks that are incarcerated have done. I do believe they should be treated with dignity. They should be treated with respect, and they should not have their lives be in jeopardy for them just to be incarcerated in our county system. And I'm very concerned that this is going to continue under his supervision. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Karen.
Okay, and yep. Next speaker is David Duran. Go ahead.
Yes, good morning, everyone. Thank you. I want to quickly echo what Felicity and Karen had said, but I'd also like to share some more information with you regarding a population in Orange County that does not have the same civil rights that we in this room recognize. I'm talking about the unhoused. They definitely have lesser rights. It's been proven. It's been, I'm obviously very passionate about this. So I want to share with you that since the county cleared the riverbed back in January 2018, to date, there's been approximately 1,500 deaths of people without abode. That's infants, that's children, women, men, LGBTQ, veterans, et cetera. These people don't have a voice any longer. And the people living on the streets don't have a voice. So what I'm calling to share and ask is that maybe this county can start and recognize people who are suffering from abject poverty, people who are living on the streets, and recognize them as a protected class, not to give them extra rights, but to protect them from others who find them less than, so that the crimes committed to them are recognized as a higher crime. I think this would help to give them some protection because frankly, you know, the wolf is getting to tell how the chickens died. And I'm talking about the Orange County Sheriff Coroner. It's their reports that I gathered this information from. And how is it that the county is the one who gets to identify how the unhoused died? They have, again, no protection. And it's unfortunately not their word anymore against the sheriffs or law enforcement. So I'm hoping that this opens the eyes and gives this room something to think about. And hopefully Orange County can maybe be a role model. Since we are the second largest population of unhoused here in Orange County in the nation, maybe Orange County can be a role model for the rest of the nation and recognize the unhoused as a protected class. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, David. It's so important for us to pay attention to all the members of our community. And as you said, that's a large portion of our community, and we can't ignore the situation and we can't ignore their needs.
Can I respond?
Yes.
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 So I worked in Skid Row for years and years. And so my population was only the homeless. Mm-hmm. And it is such a huge issue. It moves so far beyond housing. And I'm hoping in the next year to be able to work with Sacramento on implementing much, much more effective plans than we keep doing, which is putting tents up or doing all the things we're doing. But it is an issue. It's a huge issue. But we do have three classes of homelessness. We have people that, as you say, have no homes, but we also have people that will not live anywhere but on the streets. Even on the shelters, they will not go into the shelters because they prefer to be safe and they feel safe on the street. They don't feel safe in the shelters. And then we have the very serious mentally ill. And so we have so many levels of homelessness that do not fall into one category. And it's a huge, huge issue. And I totally concur with you that the man that was just speaking, it's almost like they're voiceless, but they're voiceless because we don't have a system in place. It isn't just that they are dying at the hands of people that do hurt homeless people. They do. You know, there are people that are aggressive towards homeless people, and homeless people hurt each other. And so the issue is absolutely paramount that we deal with it. But again, it has to be dealt with the facts and the knowledge of what that population is made up of and how we can help them individually. So, you know, I do concur with the man that just spoke. But again, you know, it isn't as easy as just one change here. It's a major factor. I mean, I can tell you truthfully, working in Skid Row was one of the highlights of my life and will stay with me for the rest of my life, because I met people that were the most amazing people in life. And I'm a germaphobe. And in Skid Row, I was able to hug people that I would never have considered hugging. And so it was a gift that I was given to actually be present and be privileged to be part of their lives and their stories. So I definitely am a candidate to do something. And I just wanted the man to know that it's such a huge, huge problem.
Thank you, Commissioner O'Neill.
We do still have one public speaker.
Oh, okay.
Pat Davis. Go ahead.
Good morning. I'm hoping you can hear me.
Yes.
Thank you for the time this morning. I didn't realize all my dear friends I don't get to see much are here today. The issue of the unhoused is on my mind. Yesterday we had the monthly memorial uplifting the names of those who died on the street.
Excuse me, Pat.
Be at 10% of the unhoused the county considers on the street as deaths by the year's end. So if that's a way to lessen our homeless numbers, that's quite concerning.
Do you have something, there's some feedback on the back, and do you have a radio or something on, or are you in an office or something?
Yes, I'm in an office.
Okay. Waiting for my
turn. Okay. Let me just say, please don't forget those of unhoused. There are no simple solutions. And care court being tested out in Orange County is quite frightening. The commissioner is right. There is not one size fits all, but care court is not going to be the best solution between the sheriff's input and others, because we tend to put folks in boxes and be angry if they don't accept the help that we're offering. But looking forward to Hunger and Homelessness Awareness Week and Longest Night. So thank you again for all you do, and this is a crazy time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, that is all for our public comments.
All right, moving to the next item, please.
Next is item four, speaker from LGBTQ plus Center OC on hate acts, reports, and referrals. And she did just join us.
Just saw her there. Hi, Stephanie. I'd like to introduce to you Stephanie Camacho Van Dyke, Director of Advocacy and Education of the LGBTQ Center of Orange County. Stephanie joined the center in 2011. As the former youth program manager, she helped to develop the youth program from a weekly drop-in social group to a comprehensive program that supports diverse needs of Orange County LGBTQ youth and young adults. In her position as the Director of Advocacy and Education, Stephanie contributes to the fields of advocacy and education through our ongoing collaborations with Gender and Sexualities Alliance, student leaders, educators, and administrators across Orange County. She's passionate about her advocacy work with public schools and universities around inclusive education, policies and curriculum development, and implementation. And she and her team have collaborated with 50 schools across Orange County to provide student support services and LGBTQ-focused education. Her involvement includes voter engagement educational campaigns to bring out more LGBTQ voters to the polls and collaborating with partner organizations to end related violence in Orange County. In the past 2 years, Stephanie has proudly led her team to develop their Elevation program, which is under the LGBTQ Center OC's Youth Leadership Program, to include substance use advocacy prevention, mental health advocacy, and services and restorative practices that reduce the expulsion and suspension rate for LGBTQ and BIPOC students affected by substance abuse. Currently, as the CBOs, she and other colleagues from LGBTQ Center of Orange County are partnering with Orange County Human Relations Commission staff to carry out the Hate Hurts Us All project by supporting the needs of queer folks who are targets of hate crimes and incidents. Today, Stephanie will be speaking to us on some of the experiences and information as a CBO in taking hate activity reports and referrals and more things. Please join me in welcoming Stephanie Camacho Van Dyke.
Hi, everybody.
Hi, Steph.
Hello, hello. Joanne, thank you so much for the introduction. It's good to see some familiar faces on this call and some new faces as well. My name is Stephanie. My pronouns are she, her, ella. I'm the Director of Advocacy and Education at the center, like Joanne mentioned. And it's really wonderful to be with you all today to kind of catch you up to speed with some of the work that we've been doing at the LGBTQ Center OC with our Hate Hurts Us All campaign. This is a campaign that I feel like is really important and impactful, and it's just getting started as well. This past Saturday, I do want to, call special attention that, we do see hate as a prominent driving force here in Orange County that impacts LGBTQIA folks, but also in particular, like our trans and non-binary community members as well. The center hosted a rally at the Anaheim Convention Center this past Saturday. We had a really good turnout of supporters. I would say 75 supporters who came out, but also there is also the opposition who came out as well. And it wasn't just one group, it was multiple groups. There was a group called Our Duty that came out, and different other subgroups like Gays Against Groomers, the standard folks who come out with their, religious signs, God Hates Fs. We also saw people coming all the way from Arizona to make a stand. So the reason why the Anaheim Convention Center is because the American Association of Pediatrics was hosting a conference, and they provide gender affirming services. And so we had all these hate groups who came out to kind of rally against the AAP. And, considering that we're coming out of COVID, you know, the past 2 years or so, that it brings, you hear about it online, you hear about it in the news, but when you're face to face with someone who is just spreading such vitriolic language, hurtful language, hateful language, things get real really quick, to see just happen right in front of you. And so just to see that these groups came, you know, that they met up, it's really eye-opening and kind of underscores the importance of, you know, our collaborative work with Orange County Human Relations and why we need to continue fighting against hate here in Orange County. Not only among, you know, not only to kind of come out in support of like other BIPOC groups, other marginalized groups, but also for the LGBTQ community. With the Hate Hurts Us All campaign, I do kind of want to bring to light some numbers. So far since June, Leonel, you might, I think it's since June or July. I'm so bad. Sorry. We've received 10 reports of hate crimes or incidences. We've also, in addition to those 10, the center has received 14 direct reports. And then also 3 calls that I know of and that have been reported, that have been hateful calls coming into the center, in general. And this is just kind of like the midst, just starting to kind of document these reports that have been coming in. And also with the help and the structure of the Hate Hurts Us All campaign, we've been able to kind of create a foundation to better capture the data that's coming in, but also to provide the linkages to support to folks who reach out and who want support. Oftentimes though, we have folks who, when we call, one, they don't call back or they don't answer. So that's kind of like a question that I have, like, well, you know, why aren't they picking up or why aren't they calling back? Is there a better way to address or support those folks? But I like, as a collaborative, like that we, along with other organizations, have the opportunity to kind of talk, to also share like what's been going on in our respective communities, what our organizations have seen, and kind of putting into light like what's going on here in Orange County. I know with our work, so Jocelyn, who's our youth program assistant, also helps with supporting this work. And she's often the one that kind of follows up with the intakes and providing support and offering resources and whatnot. We do want to continue pushing the word out for the campaign. And so one of the things that Jocelyn and I have talked about is doing more outreach. So one of Joss's responsibilities is reaching out to our schools here in Orange County, and spreading the word to our students and youth. We were able to get the cards, thanks to Leonel, the cards printed out on really nice, fine cardboard stock paper. So when we pass it out, when we do outreach events, it's something that the community can pick up and take and have as a resource for them. We also do have done different events. So just as we were getting the campaign started, we did a Pulse Remembrance event back in June, to raise awareness and to kind of commemorate, those who were impacted by hate, at, Pulse back in 2016. And so that's something that we want to integrate every year, just because this was also, I believe that was our first event back into doing in person. And it was really impactful to see 30 folks who came out in support, all wearing masks, of course, but still, like, it is a different feeling when we're meeting in person and providing that support in person via, you know, in contrast to doing things virtually. So it was really great. We were able to present on, you know, the campaign, and then also open the opportunity to recognize and commemorate those that we lost at Pulse. Another event that we're doing this month, actually next Thursday, in collaboration with some of the OCHR folks. So October is National Bullying Awareness Month. And so we're going to be doing the first of a couple dialogues, community dialogues with community. This one will be centered around bullying and violence against students in schools. And so we do want to open it up to the community to one, Once again, like have exposure to the Hate Hurts Us All campaign so that students, family members, community members know like where to turn to, where to report when they experience an instance of hate or violence or bullying on their campus or in their community. And then also offer the opportunity to kind of talk it through too, you know, to talk about the theme of the month with bullying, you know, how can we as a community here in Orange County, you know, work together to combat bullying in schools? Because I have heard instances as of this school year, and I can share this, you know, vaguely or, you know, briefly, but there was an instance that we received from a school in South Orange County where they were doing their club rush and the GSA or the Gender and Sexuality Student Alliance, they were having materials to promote their club and to get membership or student participation. And that there were other students who were pelting food at them, you know, on a school campus. Like what kind of tone does that send? You know, if you're having other students pelt food at you and, you know, what kind of impression does it give you of your peers and the safety of the campus? So that's one example. But we have seen also like from Jocelyn, like she's, you know, heard of, you know, an increase in bullying happening in schools. And it's just, yeah, I'm just being wary of time, and I tend to ramble, so sorry. But I'm very grateful that our organization is able to be at the table with this campaign. In discussing how hate impacts us all, how it hurts us all, and most importantly, what we can do as a community to kind of stand up to it and do more, right? I tell this to other folks, but I think like having, being in, you know, sequestered, like in an office space or at home during COVID, I think so much has changed in the past 2 years. And I think now that we have the opportunity to go back into the community to do more community work, I think it's a new opportunity for us to make and continue doing impactful work in the community in that sense. And so, yeah, so I totally went over like the 7 minutes that I had, but thank you so much for inviting me. And I can drop my, you can get my contact information from Leonel if you'd like to follow up, or Joanne. Or Gingrich. I'm happy to answer any questions and share resources with you all. And I hope this kind of gives you some insight as to where we're coming from.
Thank you so much, Stephanie. We're so happy and really glad that you're a part of this project, the Hate Hurts Us All project, because it's just so important to cover all areas. And we appreciate you. And does anyone have a quick question for Stephanie? Yes, Commissioner Leach.
Stephanie, thank you so much for your presentation. You brought up something at the end that I was actually going to ask a question about, and I'll just try to expand it just a little bit. Your reference to a school in South Orange County and GSA materials. I worked with an incident some years ago. I was contacted by a school board member when there was an incident concerning GSA membership at an Elisa Viejo school. And I think Allie, you were there as well, and several others. My question is, these young people are going, I mean, for anyone who doesn't know what GSA stands for, it is gay, straight. And so it is not just just for one group of kids. It's open to everyone. But my question is, what happened that evening was that because of the presentations being made on behalf of the kids, and there were people that came from as far away as Huntington Beach and Irvine and whatever. It wasn't just a South County type of thing. I was told by the school board member that for the first time in many years, they actually had a unanimous vote on behalf of the kids. I guess what I'm wondering is, as school years are developing, as you're pointing out, we're getting back to more and more things post-COVID. how do we collaborate, not only the students, but their parents, the school boards, and in this case, years ago, we collaborated with interfaith leaders throughout the county, as well as business leaders and political leaders. Is that being examined so that a partnership or a collaborative can come together and be raise both public awareness, but certainly educate the public?
Absolutely. And I think that can fall under this campaign in particular. We certainly need to have parents and families at the table. Mm-hmm. You know, who's going out to the school board meetings and spreading misinformation? There's some parents, right? Mm-hmm. That are consuming particular media, or they're listening to like hateful groups spew out their hate, you know? You know, they're thinking all sorts of things, right? Mm-hmm. And they're the ones that are showing up at the school board meetings and making a stand. Similarly, I think it's really important, one, that we bring parents and families to the table, of course, into the conversation. You know, we can't have them siloed and, you know, strictly focus on youth and young adults. We have to also include them in our activities, our events, you know, sharing community space with them is really important, and kind of showing like, you know, we're just like everybody else. We're just queer and trans or non-binary. And so we have to bring them to the table, and then also going to school board meetings as well. There's all sorts of fires across Orange County right now. You know, I'm not sure if you heard about the instance with the teacher in South Orange County with the queer library, and how there was like this whole explosion down there and so much controversy over these LGBTQ books that they were having in their classroom. You know, so it's really important that, you know, we show our support. We have to be visible and make a presence and a stand on that. So bringing parents to the fold, speaking at school board meetings, doing more public events, I think is really important as well. And centering youth and their voices and what's happening, because they're the ones in school, they're the ones experiencing this all. And so we really need to, you know, listen to them and kind of uplift them and what they want to see, right? There's a lot more youth who are coming out, and even so at younger and younger ages too. And it's so important to establish these GSAs in DOT, as you mentioned. You know, that could be Gay Straight Alliance, Gender and Sexuality Alliance, Queer Student Alliance, Rainbow Club. Like, it can look in different ways, but the bottom line is that, you know, we do have to show our support, do more education, more advocacy, and kind of be charged up, because midterms are only coming up and things are just going to get more and more heated. So it's really important that we come together at a community during this critical time.
Thank you.
Yeah, I do see. Well, I saw one hand raise, and I wasn't sure if they wanted to ask any questions, but yeah.
Actually, it was me. Oh, so, yes. But I think I'll probably just follow up with you separately in an email, because I actually am curious about the work that you do with older adults, because I'm also part of an agency that what's central to what we do is working with seniors. And I've always been sort of curious and wanting to be mindful of that population, because I think that there's definitely a lot of emphasis with the youth, which is very, you know, important and critical. But I think that there's also a lot of older adults in which I consider them sort of invisible, whether it's by choice, because, you know, they're just not ready to be out there. But, you know, we participated in the Pride Parade, and I think that we were one of the only few, or maybe the only one, who had older adult representation there. And I can see from the crowd that it really resonated with them. Yeah.
And advocacy can look like many things too. It's not only showing up, but it's also letter writing, posting on social media, promoting education, all sorts of ways, you know. And Jennifer, I'd love to follow up with you and get you connected with Andrea. She's our senior services case manager. And so she, we could all talk about like what that looks like and how we can engage some of our seniors into the fold too.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you for your thoughtful questions.
And thank you so much, Stephanie, for being with us. And as Steph said, if you need to contact her further, you can get Gingrich or myself can let you have her contact info.
Yes. Thank you so much, y'all. Have a good rest of your day.
Okay, bye.
All right, bye.
All right, great. Jamie, can we move on to the next item, please?
Yes, item number 5 is review and reconsider state of emergency under AB 361 and make findings to continue virtual meetings due to the proclaimed state of emergency arising from COVID-19 as required by government code subsection 54959E3.
Okay, we're going to get it right this time. So our next meeting is on the 14th. On the 10th.
So we will not have to have a special meeting between now and then.
We won't have a special meeting. And are there any comments about us? Continue. Yes, Commissioner Steinberg.
Well, certainly Zoom makes it a lot easier for us. And, you know, there's a lot of value in that. But I just, from my own experience in my work, being in person adds a whole other element of communication to Dot's opening story about human relations. Seeing the world in a three-dimensional way can often be really important, as 90% of communication is kind of nonverbal. And I just wonder if it's worth the conversation. Do we split the difference, half on Zoom, half in person? Once a quarter come in person, I could vote either way. I don't feel strongly about it, but I just don't want us to assume that this is the best way to do it as a human relations commission. So I just throw it out there for thoughts, I guess, so more than anything.
And I think, Jenna, I think that we mentioned trying to do half and half type meeting, and is that allowed or no?
Jamie, correct me if I'm wrong, but no, we can't do virtual and we can't offer both. It's one or the other.
I mean, you could, but I'd have to put all your addresses right. All over the agenda, and you'd have right. to post it at your locations.
May I ask, has anyone checked, and I have failed on this one myself, but there were, I think, something like 4 different bills before the state legislature dealing with this very thing so that hybrid meetings could be done without exposing everyone's addresses or anything. Is there an update on that that anyone is aware of?
I think currently our council is reviewing that and will provide recommendation to the departments.
Yeah, we haven't heard back from county council yet as far as what we can do.
And I mean, I'm on the same path as Commissioner Steinberg. I think it can tend to be, okay, this is just the way it's done. And I think we need to really consider what, you know, just rolling it over each month. Let's really consider why we're rolling it over and is there still a need to roll it over? It to me as well, and everybody's kind of mentioned it, it makes such a difference, I feel, being in person. And we haven't had that, you know, in so long. I don't know, comments or concerns? Anybody have something they would like to say about us continuing this?
Could Amy speak to this a little bit? I rely so much on what she says, and knowing that we're kind of going into a flu and possible COVID surge or resurge, I'd love to hear Amy's perspective on this.
Thank you so much. I will say this very, very quietly because I'm in the middle of the call center, and if I say it loudly, then I'll jinx myself. But right now, the cases are low, not non-existent by any stretch. I haven't had a zero day in a long time. But, you know, if you look at the CDC data throughout the United States right now, most parts of our country are in the low level of community transmission. You're right in terms of what's forecasted for influenza. It's anticipated to be a harder influenza season. But, you know, from a COVID perspective, I would say, you know, now's probably a better time than most. And I'm kind of wondering if there's an opportunity to, and Commissioner Steinberg, I don't mean to put words in your mouth, but I think this might have been what you were referring to. Like if we have some meetings be not hybrid, but completely in person, and some meetings be completely remote, and have that flexibility based on also providing access for our callers. You know, some people, they're able to participate more because we are remote, just, you know, the cost of parking downtown and everything is a bit much. And so there's pros and cons, but we, from a public health perspective, boy, if we're going to meet in person, now's the time to do it.
That is what I meant. So thank you for the clarification.
Yeah. But me, I knew you meant that as well, but didn't we discuss that too before, that if we go back, then we're going back. I mean, I'm just talking to Jenna and Jamie now, that we can't say, because of the reason that we're, you know, that this is resting on is because of COVID, right? And the state of emergency. So if we go back to a live meeting and then the following month, we can't just say, and then this month is going to be our virtual. Am I correct in that, Jamie? Did we?
And where do we actually meet? Because I've never met. And I think one of the things we talked about was the construction that was taking place. Oh, am I? I'm muted. You know, we were saying at the time we were thinking of going back, there was no way to get in and out, and we were waiting a little bit. But I have to concur with Rick and Joanne that it is so nice to be in person, just to have that sense of affect and spontaneity that you get that you don't get on a Zoom meeting. But I mean, I'm not desiring driving or parking, but it's like, if that's part of the scenario, then so be it. But I think that was also one of the issues, was the construction.
Yeah, in the place that was your regular meeting place, you can't meet there anymore because that building has been fenced off and it is set for demolition.
Oh, okay.
So you'd have to find another regular meeting spot. Which we do have in the new building, but like people had mentioned, the construction and the paying for parking was an issue.
But there is a commission room in the new building.
There's like a, there's conference, they're called multi-purpose rooms. They're not quite the setup that you had before in the commission room in the Hall of Admin, where you have like the dais and it's more formal setup that we... We don't have that here, but yes, we do have some rooms where we can have tables set up for everybody and then chairs for the audience as well. We do have that.
I'll just raise an old issue then, that the Board of Supervisors felt very strongly that we meet in person at that space at the given time. If what you're saying is, and I can't remember, maybe even the bylaws address this now, I can't remember, that we could go to any county building. I mean, we could take the show on the road too, in some ways, to different parts of the county. And back in the day, we didn't even do it in county offices. We actually, the LGBTQ center, we had one or two meetings there. We had a homelessness meeting somewhere, I can't remember. Disneyland we met once. I mean, it's really quite good to get out on the road, but I think the policy is, if I'm not mistaken, or rule, that it has to be at a county building during working hours.
I can chime in. So the updated bylaws did provide some clarification regarding the location, and it has to be at a location within Orange County, approved by the county during regular business hours and at no cost to the county. So those are kind of the requirements we have to follow.
And Madam, I'm sorry, Dot. Sorry.
No, I was just going to say, in the case of, and I'm not sure what we're looking at cost-wise, I haven't been down there in a long time, but when, Jenna, when you're saying no cost to the county, that would not include covering the parking for the commissioners who are coming someplace to do the work for the county?
Yeah, that's correct. We have no way to reimburse commissioners for parking. That there's no budget for that.
Okay.
And additionally, like if you know you pick a location, say you know, at Disney, and there is a cost associated, there is no budget to pay for that meeting space as well.
So, Madam Chair, I'm happy to volunteer if you would like to think this through and write something up for us to look at. I mean, we shouldn't decide on the fly here anyway. It has to be agendized, but I'm happy if there's another commissioner who would like to have a half an hour conversation to brainstorm. Okay, Amy, well, I shouldn't appoint you. The chair should appoint you, but.
That's all right. Commissioner Buck, we'll work with you.
Awesome. If that's okay with you, and we can just kind of make a presentation, and maybe the idea will be to stay online if we're talking about equity and all sorts of other things, but it's worth some thought instead of just automatically voting on it every month. So thank you for indulging me.
No, thank you. I appreciate that. I appreciate you stepping up to say you'll work on that, and Commissioner Buck as well. So for today, we will take a vote on next month's meeting on having it as a virtual meeting. And Jamie, can you call the roll, please?
We need a motion and a second.
Oh, I'm sorry, a motion. We have a motion to continue with virtual meeting. Commissioner Steinberg, so moves.
I'll second.
And Commissioner Leach, okay.
All right, I'll call roll for the vote. Commissioner Briceño, Commissioner Buck?
Yes.
Commissioner Duran? You're muted, Commissioner Duran. And come back. Commissioner Faruqi, Commissioner Kent, Commissioner Leach?
Yes.
Commissioner Lee, Commissioner Matsuba?
Yes.
Commissioner O'Neill?
Yes.
Commissioner Steinberg?
Yes.
Commissioner Wang?
Yes.
And Commissioner Duran? She's still muted, but passes with the majority of the members present.
Okay. All right, thank you. Moving on to the next item.
Okay, item number six is chair to assign commissioners to form communications standing committee.
Okay, so I know Commissioner Leach was kind of talking about this two meetings ago and Commissioner Faruqi. I don't know if we're ready to move forward with this, the assignment, or we can table this to the next meeting because first of all, Commissioner Faruqi's not here, and I would prefer to have Norma have some input on this. So I would like to table this until our next meeting.
Okay.
Thank you. All right, next item, please.
Item number seven is La Palma Cyprus 75th year Independence Day celebration of India and extremist protesters attempting to interrupt event. I believe that was by Commissioner Faruqi.
Faruqi, and I just texted with him, and he's had to go to Atlanta. That's why he's not here today. So we're going to move on.
Okay. Please. Item number eight, Board of Supervisors Memorandum, Commission Presentation on Women's Rights Regarding the Death of Mahsa Amini.
And Commissioner Wang, I will invite you to please share with us how things went at the Board of Supervisors meeting.
Sure. So last Tuesday, we were invited by Supervisor Bartlett and Supervisor Foley to speak on the human rights of women regarding the death of Mahsa Amini and the impact that it's making in Orange County, because you know we definitely have a good number of our Iranian American here. And I don't know if you guys seen it or participated in the protest around Orange County, but it's, at least from my experience, it's been really incredible to hear from so many of my friends and so many people out in the community about how it really impacts them as individuals and for their thoughts about their families in Iran. And so last week, we were invited to speak on this as a commission in terms of sharing what we represent and how we stand with the community. And in addition to sharing about what our commission is and our mission, I did my homework in terms of, I felt it's still important to be a voice for the Iranian community. And so I actually quoted from some of our Iranian students. They're studying abroad over here, and they actually wrote letters and shared their thoughts, but they stayed anonymous, but they still wanted to be heard. So I summed it like a sentence, because it was pretty consistent in their letters in terms of how they feel and how angry and how scared and how hurt they are. So I'll just read really briefly. For the past couple of weeks, we have received calls, messages, letters from the community, including students who shared anonymously but still wanted to be heard. They want to say, we ask you to stand with Iranian people who chant on the street, women, life, freedom. And in the closing that I actually made, I said a few words from Iranian American in our county. And this is what he wrote in no editing. As a father of a year-old daughter, I dream for a world that women's rights and equality are given to all women, regardless of sex, gender, or ethnicity, or religious beliefs. The world should amplify these freedom and women's rights voices and support them. I live in a free society and I am not afraid. If we cannot be brave, how do we expect the 13 or 14 year olds getting killed to be brave? And so in closing, we chant together, women, life, freedom. And so I have to say that that was a very meaningful opportunity to stand with two Iranian women and just lend them that space to be heard. I really have to say that this is one of those moments as Dot, you know, you say like the amount of time that you spent at the commission, that for me, I know that I'll remember this moment in terms of I heard feedback afterwards from people in the community, but also my own personal network in terms of how meaningful it is, because as of right now, many of them that I know, they want to stay anonymous, but they'll fight in their own way.
Thank you. Excuse me. Thank you so much, Jennifer. And I was not able to attend that meeting. I had a prior commitment. But Jennifer, it sounds like you were quite impactful and brought a lot to the supervisors. And I appreciate that and sharing with them, you know, with the Iranian community, our support and, you know, respect for their community. Thank you so much. All right. Moving to the next, please.
Item 9 is Commissioner Staff Reports, A, 3-month Hate Activity Summary Report, B, Update on Hate Hurts Us All Project, and C, Hate Crime Report Release Webinar.
And that is, who is presenting that from the staff?
Yeah, it's going to start with me.
Is that you?
Yeah.
Hi, Sarah.
Hi. I use she, her pronouns, and I think Ginnert is just gonna share some slides. So we'll give him just a minute. Thank you, Ginnert. So I wanna say that even though this meeting started out, Dot, with your moment of reflection on human relations, and saying, you know, we've been talking about hate a lot. I'm gonna come back and talk about hate for a little bit longer, but hopefully in closing, kind of come back to the some sentiment that you shared as well. So what we wanted to share was for the past 3 months, well, June to August is when we've collected the information. In June, we started to launch that Hate Hurts Us All campaign, and what part of that meant was a reporting system, a centralized reporting system through 2110C. And so we wanted to share some updates about how this reporting system has worked, kind of what the big picture is, what it looks like, and also the experiences of what kind of choices victims have in the process. Can switch to the, awesome, thank you. Oh, one more back. That just so folks know what this reporting form looks like, there's actually 4 different ways to report hate incidents or hate crimes to 2110C. One is to call 211 from your phone. So if you have, and that will route you directly to then talk to someone at 211 to report a hate incident or hate crime. And then they log everything that that phone call is about. Hate activity can also be reported online in an online form or via email. So if you know you're better at writing a paragraph or some bullets of what happened, you can email them that in, or folks can also text text in information to 2110C about hate activity that's going on. And then if the folks choose to do the online reporting, this is actually the interface of what you'll see. And be able to choose a language and then begin the report form. So something that we receive from 2110C is all the data about, you know, how many calls come in, and this is really how many touch points come in, right? So this could be calls, this could be emails, this is the online reports. What this is showing is the two representatives, that are specifically trained and assigned to field hate activity reports, right? And to connect back with the victims who are reporting this hate activity that has happened to them and have indicated that they want a callback, essentially. They want to be contacted. So what we're seeing are really, really big numbers. And the big numbers don't necessarily mean all of these calls were about hate activity that happened, because you know, the big work of figuring out and finding out what has happened in the community is that these folks, even though they are trained specifically to work with folks reporting hate activity, they're also, you know, working for this big organization that is getting a lot of calls for a lot of different areas. So folks in need of basic needs services or housing services, right, or other kinds of emergencies. So that's still part of the call system that's happening. And then what these folks are doing are also filtering down and asking questions about hate activity, or specifically when a report has come in just for a hate incident or hate crime, then they're doing that outbound work of contacting back. So this is really just big picture. Bird's eye view. And then in terms of the number of reports that were received, yeah. So 68 of those total calls, again, calls is any form. So reports received, that there were 68 over the last 3 months, June, July, and August. And just a little bit of information on the screen about what those calls you know, who made the calls. So by and large, it's folks that have experienced this hate incident or crime themselves. They are self-reporting what happened, right? And then other, however, anyone can report hate incidents and activities, right? So if you are a witness or you observe something, you can do that. And we know that two reports were made by witnesses. If you're a victim advocate, right, someone who receives information from, you're working with a client, right, and they experience the hate incident or crime, you can ask if you can report it on their behalf, right? And then we know that six were just from an unknown source. They might have skipped that question or something along those lines. So far, the only two methodology of ways folks have been reporting is via phone call. Or the online form. No emails and no text yet. And then just a little bit about the reports. So something that is tracked is how long are these calls, right? How long are folks talking with someone, you know, being present, opening that the space is open to listen and talk through what happened. And on average, it's just, you know, hitting right under 15 minutes. Over the last 3 months. The languages utilized, there's been at least five different languages that have been utilized in the report form or calls that have come through. Knowing that that was a big, that was something that was really important to, with regard to access, right, of being able to report hate activity. And then the roles of the community navigator, those are the folks that are fielding the call. I didn't say their title earlier, but that's their title. And really their roles are to first and foremost, to listen, right? Jennifer, you were saying, you know, that was something that you were doing at that rally, and that's what they're doing on the other end of a phone or email. Record what happened, assess the needs of the person who's calling, and then offer access to information, resources, support, and referral. Some of, again, kind of this is connected to about what the reports are about. So when folks are filling out a form or if they're calling in, they're asked what kind of hate activity happened, right? Or they can select what's in that little white box is what they can select. And they can choose, you know, from these different options, what happened. So what we know from those 68 reports is that the top five types of hate activity, types of things that happened were in general harassment, right? Harassment, verbal name calling, bullying, maybe just a threats of violence or physical assault or battery. So those were the most common of what we saw in those 68 reports that have come in the last 3 months. And then the options that victims have after reporting. So reporting is really the first choice, right? Something happened to them. They experienced bias motivated hate, and the first choice is to report or not. After that, they can make the choice to be contacted back, right? So this is indicated in the online form, and also if they do make a call, they're already calling. But if there's anything around leaving a message or an email or a text, right, the protocol is that they get to make the decision about being contacted back. Also to accept or reject the offer to receive referrals. So that's something that they can decide to do. And then if the choice is to accept the referrals, they can also accept or reject the referral agency's services, right? So something that Stephanie said when she was presenting from the LGBTQ Center OC was, you know, that the LGBT Center, Q Center OC was a referral agency, and they received a number of referrals. And sometimes what's happening is that the victim might not call them back, right? Or might not answer their call. Again, that's because they have the choice to do that, right? Trying to still make it centered on the victims making choices after bias motivated hate after they've experienced bias motivated hate. So just wanted to share that, a little bit of that. And then so referrals, so we are working with 6 community-based organizations primarily. We also serve as the 7th community-based organization as a point of referral. So this just shows how many referrals were made. Excuse me, some referrals, sometimes multiple agencies are referred. So the numbers don't add up. It's not, we're not seeing a clean 68. It might be because 2 or 3 agencies were points of referrals. And this is connected directly to the 6 CBOs that we are in contract with and working with. There are other kinds of referrals that are made and services that are offered in referrals. So sometimes there's agencies that are providing basic needs or providing legal support or providing housing support, right? And those are additional referring agencies. Or referrals that might be made according to, you know, what's going on with the person who made this report and what their needs are. That's the end of that part. And gonna have Leonel shift to talking about the Hate Hurts Us All project update.
Yeah, so I'm gonna share a little bit specifically for the month of September on the outreach component, marketing pieces of the Hate Hurts Us All project. So we'll go right into the next slide. So this is for the website specifically. how many visits the website has had, and then about 1300 visits to the website, and 1900 clicks through the actual website itself. So going into the different tabs, going into the different resource pages, to the reporting site potentially. So a lot of the clicks that individuals are actually maneuvering through the actual website itself. And then from the home page of the website, so we talked about some of those clicks. We're able to track who's using what specific language of the website to guide through and look up certain information from the website. So you'll see through the languages, how many, specifically through the language, how many clicks have been visited through each of those specific languages of the seven that were selected to really expand accessibility for Orange County residents. And then here are some of the paid media ads, billboards that were put up through the month of September. So from, September 5th, all the way to October 2nd, about 30 days of these the billboards being up, so in Spanish, English, and then some of the transit ads as well too, in Vietnamese, Korean, and Chinese as well too, throughout specific targeted cities in Orange County, which you'll see on the next slide, the cities that they were put into. So Garden Grove for Vietnamese, Spanish in the cities of Santa Ana and Anaheim, Korean in the city of Buena Park, Chinese in Irvine, and then English both in Santa Ana and Westminster. With some of the estimated impressions of traffic from the company that Imprenta used to be able to buy these ads. And one of the things that I want to share also with the ads, so they're slated to be up till October 2nd, but if the ads don't get purchased, then typically the ads will continue being up for until someone does purchase the ad space to supplement that. So you might still be able to find some of those ads up around those cities. It's kind of a treasure hunt as well too. So it's kind of neat if you're driving around, you might see them. Next slide. So, and then here's some paid media summaries through the Orange County Register. You'll see that there were some paid media in September with the World Journal in Chinese, and then through a local Vietnamese newspaper as well too, that there was some paid media that was purchased to be able to get a lot of this information of the project out to the local community, where they felt like this was the kind of the highest foot traffic, highest traffic to be able to get some of this information out. And then our social media performances, some of this was through also Boost. So through on Facebook, we were able to reach about 1300 views on social media. On Instagram, about 1500, close to 1600 there, with some activity as well too, with likes and then clicks to the links that were also provided, whether it was on stories, that were posted or at or post on our social media, with the total about 2800, 633. Reaches specifically on social media itself. some key findings, again, combination of both, when you're talking about both print, digital, outdoor and social media, a lot of this kind of did garnish a lot of traffic to the website, which we hope to show and share with you all in the October report. We're keeping track of this on a weekly basis when we're meeting with our marketing firm. So we can actually share that there is an uptick already happening in traffic both to the website as well too. So, and then also with the print ads in those three different languages that were published, again, reached a lot of individuals here in our county. And just a summary and a breakdown of both digital, print, outdoor, and social media with an estimate of reaches or impressions to date October 5th to October 5th. And with that concludes that brief summary.
Yeah, back to me on the Orange County Hate Crimes Report release. We had a webinar, on September 15th. It's also the day that the Orange County Hate Crimes Report was published both on the commission's website and the council's website. Thank you. We also have the webinar posted on YouTube, and there were about 150 people who attended the webinar in the moment. And then just wanted to say thank you to Co-Chair Wang for moderating our panel of experts, and also Chief Kent, who's not here today, but still want to say thank you to him for serving on it. I wanted to mention something that I think this is where we wrap back, Dot, to what your first thought of the day was really about after report recommendations. So thinking more so about, what do we do? How do we focus not just on hate, but focus on things like belonging, relating on a human to human level, right? Having moments where folks feel seen, heard, valued, right? And so I wanted to at least just share some of those after report recommendations. So thinking about, what can we do more collectively? So one of those kind of the main topics is thinking about changing the narrative, right, regarding hate and bias. So rejecting the normalization of bias motivated hate and starting to find and talk about how we belong, right? How to make human connection, and to dispel information about anti-Semitism, racism, sexism, heterosexism, ableism, and other forms of oppression. So, again, Stephanie had mentioned that, when there's only one group who's showing up at a board of education or school board meetings, and only one perspective is given and is aligned with bias and hate, then that's what's reinforced, right? So again, finding the moments and the spaces to dispel that misinformation and change the narrative. On the individual level, right, increasing our understanding of difference and culture and race between and amongst ourselves. And to conduct research to find and prevent patterns and trends of hate activity. Those are some things that we can do to change the narrative as a recommendation based on this report. Another overarching recommendation is to focus on community safety, maybe thinking differently about, how do we take a stand? How do we, articulate the commitment to anti-bias, harassment, bullying. Maybe that's posting statements outlining that in public spaces, right? There's a lot of the reports that came in, the hate activity occurred in public spaces or in schools. So thinking about what can we do in our public spaces to continue to focus on community safety and the showing the commitment of anti-bias harassment. This could also be supporting legislation that focuses on safety from hate in public spaces, whether that's California legislation or local policies, resolutions, or proposing those things. And then encouraging law enforcement to investigate, track, and report both hate crimes and hate incidents. And this is something that Chief Kent talked about during the webinar again, and you can view the webinar on that link that's on the screen. And then the third area of after report recommendations is about funding, to allocate and acquire permanent funding. So the Hate Hurts Us All campaign, that's connected to temporary funding. So, you know, what does that look like to continue the work of both supporting victims and also putting energy and money specifically into hate prevention, right? So figuring out how can, when we're talking about individual organizations, or systems, redirecting organization budgets for education, training, professional development, again, related to implicit bias or learning more about difference, learning more about race and racism, and how to interact cross-culturally or resolve conflict, things like that. So those were what we wanted to share about in terms of what's been happening from the commission staff and what we've been up to.
Sorry about that. Thank you, Lionel, and thank you, Sarah, for the updates. It's good to hear how well we're moving forward with the project, and I hope I can spot one of those billboards. I didn't know you had billboards all over, so I'm going to be looking, going to some of those areas to see, but it looks like it's really doing great and really getting the word out. The publications that are out, I mean, I'm just glad to hear all the way we're connecting with the community and the responses that we're getting. Anybody else? I think that's good. Oh, Commissioner Buck, I'm sorry.
That's okay. So thank you. That was so exciting because when we were in the proposal phase, you know, you never know what these are going to look like, right? And there's so much to be proud of. And definitely on the media piece, that is always cool when honestly nobody buys the space afterwards because you get so much more. A quick comment and a quick question. So my comment is this, in terms of, Sarah, what you talked about in terms of length of time for those calls, like that is a long time for the call. As somebody who's operating a call center right now, that's a long time to be present with someone who's experiencing the trauma. So kudos to the team for doing that. And it really speaks volumes about the level of empathy and care that people must feel that they're willing to hang in there for a call that long. So, very, again, just kudos to you. And then a question about the website. I saw you're tracking like links and clicks and such. Are you tracking length of stay at all?
Length of stay, I can double check through Google Analytics to see if length of stay is something
that you can track. But yeah. Thank you for doing that. I'm always curious about that because I want to know always like with my websites that I've done, I want to know, did they get there and they're like, oh, that's not what I want. Or are they hanging out for a bit and finding resources that they want to stick with? So if that could be in a future report, that would be fab. Thanks.
No, awesome. Yeah. And I think those are the additional clicks that we see. So we know that how many visits to the actual home site, either through the QR codes that we have out there on flyers and on other informational material. But and then I think those are the other additional clicks that we know folks are kind of browsing through the website, but you know, not exactly sure how many, but we do know specifically with the language, the seven different threshold languages that we do know if they're clicking onto those. But yeah, I can find out to see if we can track the length of stay.
Okay, Commissioner Duran.
Yeah, hi, so sorry about earlier in the vote. Someone walked into my office. You know, Sarah, I just wanna, you know, the report looks great. So kudos to the team for putting this report together. You know, just one question in terms of the increased hate activity compared to 5 years ago. Do you think that is, so it says 165% for those not looking at it. Do you think that is attributed to because there has been more hate or because there has been more awareness of the different mechanisms of reporting? And then when we look at the reported hate incidences since 2021, are we thinking that, are you able to identify whether they're unique incidences versus maybe, you know, because somebody's connected to it, maybe one of the nonprofits and is also reporting on 211 or something like that?
Yeah, two great questions. Thank you. So it's always very hard to tell so far about specifically what this increase is about. Is it just there are more incidents? Is it that more reports are coming in, or just the reporting is going up? And so that's an area that honestly that we would need more time, energy, funding to find out, you know, what's that gap. And so what we know though is that this increase is congruent with the state and with the nation, right? So these numbers are also going up. So we do know it's not just that Orange County's numbers are going up, and it's not congruent with anything else. So it's also going up across our nation and within our state. So that's something I think that is helpful to know as well. And then with your second question, you have to remind me of your second question because now I've gone blank.
Unique users versus reporters.
Yeah, thank you. So yeah, there could be, you know, three reporters for the same incident because it could be an observer, it could be two, you know, a witness, it could be the person or people who have been affected. And so what we do is when we talk about reports that come in, we are narrowing it down. So when we see multiple reports on the same day in the same place with very similar descriptions or same descriptions, right? What we're doing is identifying that as one occurrence, right? One thing that happened, but you know, several reports of that happening. And that's really what we do before this annual report comes out, is doing a very thorough read through of all of the incidents and reports that come through. Also because we get reports from multiple agencies. So making sure that, you know, if we received a report from an agency and we've also received it, you know, for this coming 2022 year, it would be from 211OC. For 2021, that was coming primarily to our own agency, to OC Human Relations, and or law enforcement or ADL or Stop API Hate. Many organizations were collecting that information. The LGBTQ Center OC, yeah.
Excuse me, Commissioner Leach.
Thank you. Sarah, that was, from both of you, it was a great report. Thank you. And I was still impressed with the webinar and everything last month. And thank you all for pulling that together. I have two questions, and I'm not sure if it's too early, in a sense, to ask this question, or if you're even able to answer it, because as you just noted, a lot of the information coming from other agencies. But is there any way yet to for both those calling in to report, and if it is an advocate or a witness, the reporting upon whoever is being targeted. Is there any way yet to break down the demographics of who's calling in? I mean, whether it be age, gender, ableism, that type of thing. And then as a follow-up question to that, the person taking the call and listening, are there limitations as to what kind of questions can be used to follow up on this? And I guess I'm kind of thinking, not necessarily applicable, but I'm thinking a HIPAA-esque, as it were, that there's just certain things you cannot ask. Are the people who receive these reportings, are they confined in any way or limited in any way of seeking more information with follow-up questions?
Also two good questions. Thank you, Dot. So with regard to kind of demographic information and data about reporters, you didn't ask this, but also about victims, it is something that we collect and is an option to fill out, or if known, can be filled out, right? So when on this 211 OC form, and then in the process if folks are picking up the phone and calling, right? They're asked to share that information if they would like to, right? So some of what we're limited on is what people do share, or, you know, opt in to share or not share. And so we do have that, but because the numbers are so small and we also haven't collected information from any other agencies, and I will note sometimes other agencies might not collect that information at all, or might not share that with us, right? So this depends on what kind of information is shared and what we know. So yes, we have it. It's not always complete. I think that's probably the best way to put it for both, you know, descriptions and demographics of who are considered offenders, right? And also who are considered victims. And then your second question, you know, are there limitations, or are there, you know, kinds of questions that can or cannot be asked that community navigators can ask? Not necessarily. I say this, and I imagine, you know, any, not necessarily, right? But it's again about the willingness of the person to share what is going on, what the details are. And that can be, there's a number of factors similar to underreporting in general, right? Like, I don't want to relive this, or I don't want to give all the details, or I'm scared to give details because I fear retaliation, right? So, so in that way, you know, you can only kind of go so far in asking, but in terms of the kinds of questions they can ask, not necessarily any limitations of the types of questions. I know sometimes things that come up are, or, you know, even what was mentioned today about the unhoused, and it's not a protected class. It's right. It's not a protected class. Age is not a protected class. Veteran status is not protected class, right? So if that is the reason for bias motivated hate, it would be considered a hate incident, right? But still, all questions about basic needs and what's going on, what kind of services a victim might need, all of those things are asked still, right? So really taking into consideration, what is the situation? What is going on for this person? What are their core needs, both in relation to this hate activity experience and also in general, right? And that's something that 211 has the capability of doing, is making those referrals in addition to services related to hate activity.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Anyone else? Well, thank you so much to the team, Gingrich, Lionel, Sarah, thanks for the presentation and keeping us up to date on how the project is going. And we appreciate all your work on this. Excuse me.
Thank you. Just trying to keep Norma proud as well in her absence.
Yeah, thank you. Okay. The next item, Jamie.
Yeah. Item number 10 is update from OC Chiefs and Sheriff. I know Chief Kent is not here.
Okay, moving on to the next.
Item 11 is OCSD Interfaith Council update.
Yes. Our next meeting of the whole group is next Thursday at the Islamic Center of Yorba Linda. And the focus will be human trafficking and what the faith community in Orange County can do to combat this growing crime and to find local resources as well. The person from OCIAC, the Orange County Intelligence Assessment Center, will share specific data and speak about this threat that's not looming, it's here. And they're also hoping to hear from a woman from Global Hope 365 who offers resources identifying and reporting and getting help for victims of human trafficking. If you'd like to come, happy to just shoot me an email and I'll get you on the list. It should be very, very interesting. And you know, even if you're not part of a faith community, it is something that we would open up so that you could get the information about. So happy to send you the information if you'd like. So thank you so much.
Great, thank you, Commissioner Steinberg. All right, Jamie, next one.
Next is any announcements from commissioners?
I don't know if it's an announcement per se, but just with what went on in LA, my grand dog, so sorry. Just with what went on in Los Angeles this past week, I don't have words. I think it took too long for the two council people that have stepped down. And I can only hope that the other two will step down in a timelier fashion than what they're doing. But we don't have the time to really go in a discussion, but I don't have words. And I just felt we needed to mention that. Anyone else?
And I would just add on to that, the vitriol coming from Conway West, Twitter feed or whatever it was, needs to be called out loudly and clearly, just as the awful racism and absolutely vitriol coming from our elected officials. I don't know which is worse, music moguls or elected officials. Both sound bad, but this commission should stand strong saying none of that is acceptable.
Absolutely. Anyone else? And I mean, as you called out Kanye West, I want to call out Nuri Martinez as well as Kevin DeLeon, Ron Herrera, and Gil Cedillo for their just unconscionable behavior and bigot behavior, whatever. They need to step away. All right. Anyone else? Okay, Jamie.
Adjournment.
I would officially like to adjourn. Thank you so much, everyone, for your time today. And I know it was a little bit of a longer meeting, but we needed it. And thank you for your participation, your time. Norma, we're sending all our love, Imrich and you and Allie. If you speak with her again, please let her know we're thinking of her and hope that it continues to go well. And we will see everyone next time.
Hey, thank you. Mm-hmm.